Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Here's the Bad News when we come back. You know, 3,000 years ago, before the science of meteorology was even thought of, Old King Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 7, that all of the rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thence they return again. Well, you know, every year continents and islands of the earth pour down into the oceans a stupendous volume of water. In fact, it's about 286,000 cubic miles of water run into the oceans every year. And for century after century and millennium after millennium, this has been going on, and yet the sea hasn't increased its level by so much as an inch. Now, how is that possible? Well, we call it the circle or the cycle of evaporation and precipitation. Now, the writer of Ecclesiastes said that the ocean maintains its level in spite of this gigantic annual influx. And he said it does it because the rivers go back to the place from whence they came. And indeed they do. Every drop of rain that falls climbs back upon the Creator's elevator of evaporation to form themselves back into clouds and then to ride back to the head of their toboggan slide and begin their journey all over again. Now, in the modern science of meteorology, all of this is understood and its laws are well comprehended. Modern science today has now learned what the writer of Ecclesiastes knew 3,000 years ago. Now, that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Bible. And it's one more of our many lessons in our Mosaic Law School conducted twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for your free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Well, I've been reading the economic newsletters this past week, and I've got to tell you there's bad news for the upcoming period, say the next 6 months to a year. I haven't reported on the economy for a while, so I thought that I'd share with you some of the deterioration that's going on in the economic news. You're reading about it. You're hearing about it. I mean, Brian Williams, every night on the 6 o'clock news, I've been watching him now. He's reporting every night that the price of gas is going up, the stock market is going down, consumer confidence is tanking. I mean, we've known that now for the last 6 or 8 months, but there's some deterioration going on that you may not have heard about, and that's what I'm going to report to you. Looking at the International Forecaster, keeping in mind now the International Forecaster is an economic newsletter. It's more than that. It covers more than economics. It also covers politics and a whole host and plethora of other topics, but it's primarily an economic newsletter, which tells us where the economy is going, where money and finance is, where it has been, where it's going in the future. Put out by Bob Chapman, he says, the dollar has once again collapsed. So get ready for the next dollar debacle and the coming rally in gold and silver, which have just broken out. Now, the elitists have lost all credibility, and the would-be lords of the universe have told so many pathological lies that no one in the know actually believes anything emanating from the forked tongues of buck-busting, bear-bashing Ben Bernanke and Hanky Panky Paulson. If our Federal Reserve head and Treasury Secretary had been characters in a Walt Disney movie entitled Pinocchio, their noses would have quickly grown to lengths that could have been wrapped around the Earth at the equator several times. God would have had to reverse the Earth's rotation to extricate them. Wall Street tells us the odds favor 0.25% rate hikes to the Fed funds rate by the end of the year. We would like to ask whether that would be before or after the economy collapses. If before, the Fed's rate hikes will destroy what's left of our economy, and the dollar will collapse, thereby erasing any benefits from the rate hikes. If they wait until after the economy collapses, you will see rate cuts instead of rate hikes as the Fed attempts to save the fraudsters on Wall Street, who are not even remotely close to recovering from the credit crunch, despite what the elitists might tell you to the contrary. Now we ask who the morons are that make up these odds and what planet they came from. They give aliens a bad name. These index predictions are just another form of jawboning and disinformation. As soon as the economy starts its final descent into Davy Jones' locker, which is likely to occur in the very near future, the Fed and the U.S. Treasury will unceremoniously toss the so-called strong dollar policy into the nearest financial dumpster in order to save the economy and the fraudsters. Accompanying the strong dollar policy on its way to the dumpster will be the next round of derivative stock toxic waste that is on its way, courtesy of the upcoming surge and fallout from tanking real estate markets, in a process that will see the Fed blow what remains of its general collateral in exchange for such waste. Now, once the Fed and its general collateral are extinguished, we will be ushered into a new hyperinflationary era characterized by direct monetization of U.S. Treasuries to fund our deficits and to absorb more toxic waste as it continues to pour down on elitist financial institutions like Niagara Falls. So a few measly 0.25% cuts will do absolutely nothing to slow the acceleration of inflation, especially if the Fed keeps the M3 at current levels. Now, only a double-digit Fed funds rate and greatly reduced M3 could have any eventual and meaningful impact on the inflation that is built into the system for at minimum the next year and a half at levels in areas of 15-18%. And Americans are in no mood, and the economy could not withstand a 15-18% interest rate, and even then the impact will not be felt until the current baked-in inflation has run its course, which has already been baked into the economy over the last year and a half or 2 years. Direct monetization of treasuries to replenish Fed collateral and to absorb our growing deficits will put inflation beyond the point of no return, as will the breaking of the OPEC dollar pegs, which is on the horizon. Now, as you can see, there is no way that any of the proposed diminutive rate hikes will have any positive impact on our economy today or in the near future, and on the dollar or on the balance sheets of the fraudsters in Wall Street. Therefore, there will not be any rate hikes. Any increase in the Fed funds rate would be accompanied by an economic catastrophe of epic proportions that would occur as a direct result of the raising of the rate. Any rate hike would take a year to a year and a half to have any impact on inflation. And by the time the anticipated Fed rate hikes could have any kind of impact whatsoever, the economy will already be in a state of rampant hyperinflation and would be well on its way to depression. Far too late to save the dollar or the economy. Ergo, the new elitist model will soon become damn the inflation and full speed ahead. Now, the Federal Reserve and the government's lies about inflation and other economic statistics over the past 5 years have trapped them in an impossible situation. For instance, because they have tremendously understated official inflation for so long, they cannot now impose a plausible solution to actually fight inflation. Any meaningful action they might take to give people relief by lowering the level of actual inflation might be scaled down to match what they're saying about official inflation, and would therefore be totally ineffective and pointless. The same scenario holds true for other economic issues as well. The real inflation rate is 15% as I speak, and the Fed is still telling us that it's under 5%. As if to accentuate the collapse of the dollar, open interest on the U.S. dollar exchange plummeted on Wednesday by a gargantuan 20,000 contracts, from some 46,000 to 26,000. And this also means that since last week, when open interest was boosted by the plunge protection team by some 14,000 contracts, to more than 52,000 contracts to boost the dollar and to make it look as though Big Ben actually meant business about the dollar and open interest, well, it's been cut in half, with a total of 26,000 contracts having been liquidated over the course of just 1 week. That's unheard of. The last time this kind of breakdown in the U.S. dollar exchange open interest occurred was on December the 19th, 2007, when open interest dropped by 22,000 contracts, from 57 to 34. When the spot U.S. dollar index stood at 77, the spot U.S. dollar then plummeted to a double bottom of 71 on March 17th. And 71 on April the 22nd, before rebounding to a recent closing high of 74. That occurred on June 13th. Well, this week, on Friday, June 20th, the spot U.S. dollar index has already dropped to 73 from its recent closing high of only a week ago, as the collapse of the dollar got underway once again. And between December 19th and June 13th, the closing high for the spot U.S. dollar was 77.7, set on December 20th, while the all-time low was set at 70 on March 17th. Now, if that pattern is followed again, we'll be looking at a dollar breakdown to somewhere around the 67 area. Then again, we could be looking at a total collapse as hyperinflation and severe recession continue to eat away at what's left of our hapless economy. Gold and silver are headed for outer space. Now, we further note that as of Friday, there were 25,000 U.S. dollar exchange futures contracts for September and about 2,000 for December, and only a handful for later months. So there certainly does not appear to be very much interest in the strong dollar after September, which is when the supposed rate hikes are expected to occur. Now, we would wonder if it could be that traders simply do not believe that Ben the bear killer and hanky-panky about the strong dollar policy, and have a sneaking suspicion that after the American elections, it will mark the start of the final bloodbath that will destroy the real estate, stock, bond, and derivatives markets, along with the U.S. and world economies. Now, the Royal Bank of Scotland has warned of the potential for a full-fledged crash in global stock and credit markets over the next 90 days, as inflation voraciously consumes and destroys everything in its path worldwide. Morgan Stanley has predicted a catastrophic event in world currency markets during the coming months, as occurred in 1992, due to opposing views between the Fed and the ECB about what to do about monetary policy and inflation, and due to imbalances in the ECB itself. Now, both the Royal Bank of Scotland and MS, and that's Morgan Stanley, are elitist insiders high in the food chain of illuminist companies, and they know what is coming. Now, nothing could be more positive for the United States than the breakup of the European Union, which will delay the evil Illuminati's plans for a one-world government for more than 50 years, so you should be praying for its breakup. But in reviewing the movement of the yen versus the Dow, We here are astounded that every human being drawing breath on the face of our planet, and that every business entity with offices located anywhere on the globe are not fleeing in terror from the general stock and bond markets along with their related derivatives. Now, the last time that the Dow closed below 12,000 was on March 17th. On March 17th, the yen stood at 96.88 yen per dollar and 152 yen per euro. Well, on Friday, the Dow closed again below 12,000, and the yen was up to 107 to the dollar and 167 yen to the euro. And so despite all of this yen weakness in the range of 10 yen per dollar and 15 yen per euro, the stock markets have gone absolutely nowhere. And if that doesn't freaking scare you, then nothing will. The carry trade can no longer carry the markets. The deleveraging from the credit crunch, the destruction of corporate profits, stagnant consumer spending despite the stimulus, outrageous energy and food prices, and the ongoing real estate debacle, the monetary profligacy of the Fed, the wars for profit, and eternal deficits in our budget, our trade balance, our current accounts imbalances are simply too much for the markets to absorb. And even with the help of the plunge protection team to keep our heads in the sands, we're headed much lower. And we're at least 100 to 200 Dow points from a total catastrophe. And if gold and silver start to rally and the PPT, that's the plunge protection team, crashes the markets with yen hits to drain liquidity, it'll be all over but the crying for stock markets worldwide. Let me pause right here and make a couple of comments on this, because over the past, couple of months, I haven't had much to say about the economy. It's been deteriorating, and it began the deterioration. The collapse of the world's economic system, if you want a date to hang on it, began in August of 2007. So if we go back to August 2007 here, carried forward, and compare that with October. That's October of 1929. In the last Great Depression from October of 1929, it took until March of 1933 to hit the bottom. That's 3.5 years. Now, is it going to take 3.5 years to hit bottom again? Well, I'm not a prophet. I'm a reporter, so I can't tell you the answer to that question. But the deterioration that we're observing today between August of 2007 and where we are today compared to October of 29 and where we were 10 months into it the last time is about as wide as the Grand Canyon. Now, notice here, it's the deleveraging from the credit crunch. It's the destruction of corporate profits, the stagnant consumer spending, in spite of the stimulus package passed by Congress recently, these outrageous energy and food prices, the ongoing real estate debacle, the monetary profligacy of the Fed, wars for profit and eternal deficits in our budget, our trade imbalance, and our current account are simply too much for the markets to absorb. Hell, in 1929, we weren't even talking about those problems. We didn't have any current account deficits. We weren't worried about corporate profits. We didn't have gasoline that was rocketing into the stratosphere. We weren't talking about inflation. So all of these problems are exacerbating this descent into what Bob Chapman calls the Davy Jones locker here. Now, I've been reporting for the last several years that if you're in real estate, you hit the peak of the market in June of 2005. And from June of 2005, you should have been deleveraging out of real estate. If you haven't, well then, okay, you didn't. Now, if you're in stocks and bonds, it's probably too late for you to extricate yourself from stocks and bonds. You know, in life, there are choices to be made. And when we don't make a choice, that is a choice. Your lack of action is the choice that you're making. Now, that doesn't mean that you should commit suicide when this thing goes belly up. I've told my students over the years, a great opportunity occurs when there's a boom economy, and great opportunity occurs when there is a bust in the economy. It's just that the values, the modalities that we use in the business world are something different. I've never lived through a Great Depression, but I have interviewed many people that did in the last Depression. I talked to the people that made money, and then I said, how did you do that? And I talked to the people that lost money, and I said, what did you do to accomplish that? And they told me. So now, this time around, I'm listening to what the winners did and what the losers did, and let's see how I come out. And meanwhile, back on the farm, the advice that we gave you years ago, this is back in 2005 now, was to get out of debt. You know, did you get out of debt or not? Because if you didn't get out of debt, it's probably too late now. You're going to get out of debt, no doubt about it. But when you get out of debt through a foreclosure, they take all your toys away. The objective here was to get out of debt and to save all of the equity that you could, so that you could use that equity in a cash position to buy back into the market at the coming lows. So, now, I don't know if you're buying real estate right now, but I think if you're buying real estate with your profits that you cashed out on, I think that you're way ahead of the game. You're getting the cart ahead of the horse. And that's because we haven't reached the bottom yet. And in fact, all of the newsletter writers are telling us that they don't expect the bottom of the real estate market to appear until 2011 or 2012. So if you're buying real estate now, you're buying into a down market. And I was watching, you know, I woke up the other night and I got up and I turned on the TV and there was some guy on there selling his real estate package, you know, no money down. And here's how to make $1 million. Well, that guy makes money, but he makes money selling books. He's not making money in real estate, buying it no money down today. These strategies in real estate that these people are selling, they're selling these deals to desperate people that need solutions, and so that's not your solution. I mean, I've been in the real estate business for a lot of years, and I didn't buy this guy's book, but I'm fully familiar, you know, with Nickerson and Aunt Toby's. I know how that game is played, and I'm here to tell you that that isn't going to fly today in today's market anywhere. That's just nonsense. And it's nonsense until it reaches the bottom. Now, when we get to the 1933 level, now's the time to buy back into real estate. And I wouldn't say that real estate's bad. I mean, you can buy a deal today and turn it. I mean, there's always money to be made everywhere you go. I tell my students, I say, you know, opportunity is like rain. It's everywhere. It's damn hard to stay dry, you know, when there's an opportunity falling out of the skies. But being able to recognize it and capitalize on it, now that's where the trick comes in. I want you to notice here that the key statement that's made here is the Royal Bank of Scotland. That's the RBS, Royal Bank of Scotland. That's an insider bank, and they're advising their clients that in the next 90 days, and as I speak here in June, this is the last week of June 2008, put a little date here on this program for you. They're talking about 90 days, so that would be July, August, and September. And so that takes us right up to the elections. You know, the elections will be in full swing in September, October. And the elections here in the United States, for those of you that live elsewhere, is the first week of November, first Tuesday in November. As if there's an election. See, I'm not sure that there's going to be an election. And our president may do just what Mugabe in Rhodesia just did. He just said, well, there isn't going to be an election. And I'm the most competent and qualified president that you've had and have and are going to have, and so I'm just going to stay right here in office, and the rest of you can sit down and shut up. Now, that could well be the case. If it doesn't occur with this president, then it'll occur with the next one. But leaving that issue aside, the politics of it aren't important. What's important for the rest of us isn't in who's sitting in the White House. It's important as to how the economy is unraveling. And the economy is unraveling. So the smart thing to have done would be to cash out at the top, which was a couple of years ago, and then come back into the market with gold and silver, which is cash, at the bottom of the market, which is in 2011 or 12, and buy back in. Now, if you haven't done that already, well, then you're probably sitting here with your stocks and bonds and your IRAs and your retirement accounts and so on, and all of that is going to be swept away, wiped out. As one hapless fellow observed in 1923, he had bought a 20-year endowment life insurance policy in 1903. Worth 20,000 marks. And in 1923, when he cashed it in, it bought one loaf of bread. So his 20,000 mark life insurance policy over a course of 20 years just evaporated to nothing. Well, one loaf of bread. Now, that's what's coming here in the United States. It's coming worldwide. It isn't just going to hit the United States. And that's because the governments always interfere in the marketplace. That's the worst thing that can happen, boys and girls, is when the government interferes in the marketplace. And the government, when there's a crisis in the marketplace, always interferes. So you can just bank on the fact that the worst possible decision that could be made here in the upcoming catastrophe is that the government is going to interfere. And that's exactly what they're going to do. And that's because when people are hurting, they cry out to their gods. And then the gods of America are our Congress and our President. They expect our leaders there to save us. The real answer to the riddle is that we should create or cry out to our Creator, who is causing the problem. Leave these foreign and alien gods out of the equation altogether, and I think we'd get a better result, but that isn't what's going to happen. So, those of us that are sitting here in the marketplace today, how do you plan for the future? You plan for hyperinflation. Plan for it. That's what's coming. And if you think that there's going to be any relief for you out there in the marketplace from this point on, I think you get your head up the proverbial hind end. Now, you can do whatever you think's right, but I just thought I'd point out to you that historically that's never happened in the past, and it's not very likely to happen again, and it isn't happening right now as I speak, so I think that I can be pretty safe in saying that the government is going to interfere in the marketplace, and dramatically so, which will exacerbate the problem. They're supposed to solve the problem. Hell, the politicians, if they could solve the problem, would have prevented the problem, wouldn't they? So it's pretty obvious that these politicians have not prevented the problem. And if they can't prevent it, what makes you think that they can fix it? They've never been able to fix it in the past. They're not fixing it right now. And it's not very likely that they're going to fix it in the future. Now, the problem is communism, and adding more communism to the equation isn't going to solve the problem. But that's precisely what they're going to do. They will apply every communist gimmick and tactic that you can come up with to fix this problem, which will exacerbate it, which makes it better for those of us that are on the outside looking in, because if you're positioned and prepared for that eventuality, then you take advantage of it when the opportunity arises. It's what I call the shark circling syndrome. And that's what I am. I'm a shark circling, waiting for an opportunity here. Hey, it's the halfway point, and I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults in compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors and publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious. They may be economic or sectarian. They could be racial or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're back with more of Here's the Bad News. The bad news is actually good news for those people that are prepared for it and ready. If you're not prepared for it and ready, well, then it's indeed bad news. And it's surprising. A lot of times people, I hear in the classroom, oftentimes I'll hand out past copies of the International Forecaster, and then I say, well, did you learn anything from that? Well, I didn't read that. Well, I read 3 pages. And that's because the news is so bad that most people, you know, if you're an average Joe Sixpack, by the time you've read 3 pages of this, you will not be able to handle it psychologically. So I would not recommend the International Forecaster newsletter to the average Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. It's probably, for most of you people listening to me right now, way beyond anything that you can psychologically take. You know, you just can't handle it. Some of you can. Now, if you can handle this kind of bad news, it's kind of like receiving the news that the Titanic has hit an iceberg, has a 300-foot hole down the side, and it's going to sink. That's bad news. That's the bad news. The worst news is that there's only lifeboats on the boat for about half the people. And whenever a crisis or a disaster occurs, the people, when faced with the crisis, will always make the wrong decisions that are working against their best interests. I remember down in New Orleans. Do you remember those pictures? Let me refresh your recollection here. Here's the city. It's flooded out. And people, in desperation now, are breaking into the Walmart store, and which makes all the sense in the world, because the Walmart store, you know, is the warehouse where everybody goes to get their Pampers and infant meal and baby formula and their food and so on. So the people now, they're in desperate straits here, and so they break into Walmart. Now, that makes sense, and I certainly couldn't blame somebody for breaking into my garage, you know, if they thought that there was something in there that they needed, you know, to survive. But when the people broke into the Walmart store, they would go up to something that they needed. This one lady, she needed Pampers, and so she took 2 packages of Pampers, tucked them under her arm, and then reached up, kind of inexplicably, just reached up with her hand and then raked off the remaining Pampers on the shelf down into the water. And I watched that. It was being photographed by the NBC News team. You know, they were in the Walmart store watching people. They were at the time calling it looting. Well, I'd say, yeah, it's looting. But here's a city now that's been drowned. And the survivors over here, it would seem like to me, need to preserve all of the resources that they have available to them for as long as possible. I mean, if you're out in the desert, you know, and you've got one canteen of water, and you don't know how far it is to the next water hole, and you're walking across the desert, and you got a canteen full of water, you're thirsty, so you take a drink, and then do you pour the rest of it on the ground? I mean, that wouldn't make any sense, would it? And this woman took two packages of Pampers, tucked them under her arm, and then swept the rest of them down into the water. I guess the next person behind her over here didn't have any need for Pampers. Or this woman would not have any further need for Pampers, let's say, in a week or two. I don't know. Now, that's the kind of irrational behavior that people descend into when there's a disaster. This is why I've said for years to my students here in our subsistence and survival class that in order to be a survivor, you have to make your preparations far in advance of the actual event, because when the event transpires, your brain is going to turn to mush under the strain. And Americans now, in fact, I imagine people around the world, but especially here in America, we are under strain here. And Americans are making bad decisions for the future based upon the strain and the fact that their brains are turning to mush right now. Let me give you another illustration here. Most of you people have elected to hold up in the cities where you are during the upcoming depression. Probably because you didn't have any place else to go, or because you just didn't psychologically have it in your mind to make a meaningful move. All right, so now you're in the city. Let's picture you in the city of, oh, say, San Francisco. San Francisco has a lot of hills, and the water is pumped to the top of those hills. And then people use the water, and then it goes downhill, and which makes all the sense in the world. You know, as a plumber, I can tell you water runs downhill. I learned that in plumbing school. Water runs downhill, paydays on Friday. Two things that you have to know as a plumber. Now, as this water runs downhill, in some cases it runs down to the bottom of the local hill, which isn't at the bottom of the hill called the ocean. And then there's a pump there that pumps that water. Do you get that? Pumps? Pumps. Yeah, there's pumps that pump sewage. And when there's a power failure, the pumps don't work. And when the pumps don't work, then you can't pump that sewage up to the top of the next hill and then down to the ocean. And so what happens to the people at the bottom of the hill? When the pumps aren't pumping sewage, that sewage builds up in the sewer line, and then it backs up into the houses that are at that elevation, into their basements. How many people do you know of living in the city have a shutoff valve between their house and the sewer? How many? You plumbers out there, how many shutoff valves have you installed in the sewer line between the house and the sewer? Well, if you're like me, I've been in the business for 30 years. I never did install one of those. Never heard of anybody putting a shutoff valve in the sewer line. And yet every time there's a power failure and the sewage can't be pumped out, all the houses at the low end down in the valleys get flooded out. So your sewage is going to back up into your basements, those people living in the cities. Now, you elected to stay in the city, but did you think about the sewage backing up into your basement? I mean, the average plumber wouldn't think of that, much less the average Joe Sixpack. Which reminds me of a story that I got to tell you. A story here. There's a book out here. It's called the It's called ALAS, A-L-A-S, Babylon. ALAS, Babylon. And it was first put out in 1959, right at the height, you know, of the... right at the height of the Cold War, you know, when we were all expecting to get nuked by the Russians. Well, anyway, this ALAS, Babylon is the story of a guy whose brother is in the Air Force. He's a SAC pilot. And his brother, the SAC pilot, calls him from Omaha, Nebraska, and says the Russians are going to attack in 48 hours. And this guy lives about 40 miles from Orlando, Florida. So now, armed with 48 hours advance notice that nuclear war is coming in 48 hours, what would you do if you had 48 hours advance warning of this impending disaster? And that's the background or the backdrop of the book. And it's a fascinating book, fiction book, but it's... I've read that book probably 4 or 5 times. It's like reading about the Titanic. It's an event that hasn't occurred yet, but it's a scary synopsis of what people do, you know, when they're desperate, when people are faced with a catastrophe. How do they behave? And the answer is their brains turn to mush and they behave in exactly the wrong way. Every single time. Never fails. Which is why I've always told my students, I said, now listen, in the event of any kind of a problem, a catastrophe, a nuclear bomb war, you want to get as far away from people as possible. You want as much space between you and the next human being as you can get. Because that other human being over there is going to act irresponsibly and irrationally when he's confronted with disaster. Every single time. Every time. So often, in fact, and so predictable is that all you have to do is look back in history at every disaster that has ever occurred and what did the people do. It's always short range, it's always immediate, it's always, here's what I've got to do for me right now, this minute, and let the devil take the hindmost. Which makes all the sense in the world, I guess, when you get down to the bottom line, faced with death, I guess I don't have anything to lose. All right, now let's start thinking about ALAS, Babylon. By the way, you can get this probably from Brave New Books. So if you were to look at Brave New Books, remember that Brave New Bookstore down there in Austin, Texas? Their phone number is 512-480-2503. That's 512-480-2503. I'm going to recommend to you that you get a copy of this ALAS, Babylon, because most of you cannot handle the reality of the international forecaster or the privateer. Now, for those of you that can handle reality, then let me give you the address, the phone number and the address of the International Forecaster. It's published and edited and published by Bob Chapman. And their email address is internationalforecaster@yahoo.com. So if you can spell international forecaster, that's two words, at yahoo.com, and that's their email address. And you can check out their website at www.theinternationalforecaster.com. That's all one word. www.theinternationalforecaster.com. $159 a year. Worth every penny. Worth every penny. International Forecaster. So I recommend, number one, that you forget about ALAS, Babylon and get down to reality and subscribe to the International Forecaster so that you can get your feet on the ground as late as it is. And listen, you're probably not going to beat the inflation and the depression, but from that point on, what do we do? I mean, even after the collapse of the stock market in October of 1929, okay, so it's too late for you to sell your stocks at the top, convert your profits into gold and wait for the bottom where you can buy back in. Okay, well, the end of the world hasn't occurred. And I always tell my students, I say, you know, tomorrow's another day, and tomorrow will bring new opportunities. But most people don't look at opportunity. They're looking at failure. And so they're crying all the time about what they lost, as opposed to looking forward to, here's what we're going to earn, here's what we're going to make. And that's a fatal mistake in business. You know, what's past is past. If you've got your money tied up in your IRA, you can put your head between your knees and kiss her goodbye. I mean, that's just the way life is. And most people, after they have lost their homes and lost their IRAs and lost their jobs, are so busy crying about what they've lost that they haven't got their eyes open to what they can make or what they can earn. They're living in the past. And that's the problem here. It's a psychological problem. It's psychological. You know, we all have the same 24 hours every day. I don't have any more hours in the day than you have. But I'm smart enough to figure out that what I lost last year is gone. You know, forget about what happened last year. Let's concentrate on what's going to happen next year. What kind of opportunities do we have available to us next week, next month, next year? And they're everywhere. There's lots of them, and they're everywhere. So that's what you want to concentrate on. Not what you lost, but on what are we going to make in the future. Now, most of you people not being able to handle reality then probably can handle fiction. Now, this fiction book here called The Last Babylon that you can get a copy from Brave New Bookstore. I'm going to tell you a little part of the story here. This guy, the first thing he does is he goes down, closes his bank account out. Wise decision. Wise decision. Goes down, closes his bank account out, takes all the money, goes out into the marketplace, and starts buying all the things that he thinks he's going to need when the nuclear bomb drops on Orlando, Florida. So he goes down to the grocery store, and he loads up several shopping carts full of food. And he hits the frozen food section really heavy. I mean, he's stockpiled meat and all kinds of frozen foods. And he takes these home and he puts them in his freezer. And sure enough, the bomb drops 2 days later, and there's one on Orlando, and it knocks out all the power. And so now with no electricity, which, you know, 2 days ago we could not have envisioned life without electricity until a nuclear bomb drops on the power plant and it's knocked out and there's no electricity. And in fact, for the duration of the book, which transpires over the next year. The story is about a year after the bomb drops and they're talking about their survival. There's no electricity. Nobody has any electricity. Boys and girls, there was life in America before electricity, and I predict there will be life in America after electricity. But for you people living in the cities, life without electricity is going to be a nightmare. Out here in the countryside, it's an inconvenience. In the city, it's the difference between living and dying. Now, fortunately, this guy is living out in the countryside, and so it's an inconvenience, but the inconvenience manifests itself the very next morning as the food in the freezer is thawing. So over the next week, they eat as much of the food as they can out of the freezer. He doesn't have a long-term plan. He does not have a six-week or a six-month or a six-year plan. He went down and bought food. He's got food for 72 hours. Now, I reported to you that here in America, the average Joe six-pack has no survival plan at all. Nothing. I say the average. And that's because only 7% of the American people have any kind of emergency plan. Only 7%. And that 7% who have an emergency plan is limited to 72 hours. It's the FEMA program. So here's your government. They said, be prepared for a 72-hour event. Boys and girls, this Great Depression is going to be much longer than a 72-hour event. You needed to have prepared for at least 4 years. And if you don't have a four-year food supply and a four-year plan, I'd say that you're going to be a day late and a dollar short. That doesn't mean you're going to die. It just means that your living standards are going to take a pretty significant hit. It's kind of like, were you prepared for Hurricane Katrina? I mean, if you were prepared for Hurricane Katrina, you did not live in New Orleans. Now, if you're living in New Orleans when Hurricane Katrina hits, then you were not prepared for Hurricane Katrina. And so now what are you going to do after it hits? There was another story I got to tell you about. And this lady is being interviewed, I think, by Brian Williams. He's down there at that time. A black lady, young black lady, 20 years old, maybe 23, 4, something like that. Just a young black woman. She was about to get on a bus, and so the interviewer sticks this microphone in her face and says, where are you going? She says, I don't know. And he said, where are you coming from? She said, well, I came from the lower ninth ward, and I've been in the Astrodome or whatever that big building was for 3 days. And she said, I want to get out. I just want to get out. I don't care where I'm going. See, that woman was so desperate, you could have said, well, you're on your way to Auschwitz or Buchenwald. And she'd have said, I don't care. I don't care if I'm going to Auschwitz. I don't care where I'm going. I'm ready to go. Now, that's a reaction from a person that has absolutely no preparation whatsoever. That's the average Joe Sixpack. Just doesn't have a clue. Now, these crises are engineered by your politicians for that express purpose. It's to destroy your will to resist so that when the crisis occurs, the person who engineered the crisis has an agenda. And he wants you to fit into that agenda without any resistance. And when he has broken you psychologically like that young woman says, I don't care where I'm going. And you could have been hauling her off to the ovens, and she'd have said, I'm ready to go. Now, that's what's coming. All right, now let me go back here and tell you that if you're living in the city, take a look at your elevation, because your home there is very, very important to your survival. You need to have a shut-off valve between you and the sewer so that you can shut your neighbor's sewage off so that it doesn't flow into your basement. Or into your bathtub and into your sewer or into your bathroom. So, number one. Number two, the number one problem that you have is human waste. You need an outhouse. You have to dispose of human waste. So, what I suggest is that you go out and get yourself one of these little metal buildings from Sears. One of these little metal buildings, and you put it out in your backyard. Little metal building. And in the little metal building, which you can close, you know, they normally use these for lawn mowers and stuff like that, you know, your yard and garden stuff. Okay, what you do is you build a bench in there with a hole in it. Dig a hole in your backyard. This is called an outhouse. So that you and your family will have a place to dispose of your human waste. That's your number one problem, boys and girls. It's human waste. Number one. And if you don't have a place to dispose of your human waste when there's no water and there's no sewage and there's no electricity, you are going to be in very, very difficult straits. This is why living in the city is not a good place to be. Now remember, the Royal Bank of Scotland has said now you got about 90 days. Now I don't know that that's 100% gospel, but the Royal Bank of Scotland's got better information and better sources than George Gordon has. And it's not just reported here in the International Forecaster, it's also reported in the Privateer. I'll bring you the Privateer next time. I said we got bad news here, so I'm going to give you the bad news. Now, actually, bad news is good news. I don't know if you're aware of that, but bad news is good news. And the reason that I say that is because if I know what's coming, I can prepare for it. And if I know that this ship ran into an iceberg, and I'm in a better position to prepare for it if somebody comes up to me and says, the ship is going to sink in 2 hours and 20 minutes. So when the porter or the purser tells me, "It's all right, everything's all right, just go on down, go back to your stateroom and go back to bed," then I know that's exactly the wrong move to make, that I do not want to go back to bed. All right. So for those people that went back to bed, that wasn't the right move to make. Now, for the people that are up on the deck, as the bow is going underwater, they flee to the stern. Now, fleeing to the stern is not the solution to your problem. And you might as well face reality. Fleeing to the water is the solution to your problem. But if you get into the water at 25 degrees or 30 degrees, you're going to freeze to death in short order. So the solution is you need to get into the water, but you need to get into the water with some kind of a life raft to keep you out of the water. So you need to get off the ship, into the water, and out of the water and on the life raft. All right, now, when we get ready for subsistence and survival, there's actions that need to be taken. There's opportunity. You know, opportunity is available. Now, if it's at all possible, you would prefer to just not get on the Titanic. I was one of those fortunate people that never got on the Titanic, so I never had to face that reality when it came. But for those that are on the Titanic, those of you that are living in the cities, those of you that are involved in stocks and bonds, and you've got your home and you're living at the bottom of the hill, you know, this is where you're at, and so this is where reality takes over, and you need to make some hard, fast decisions, and you have about 90 days to do it. Because the power is going to go off, and when the power goes off, the water is going to stop flowing, and when the water stops flowing, the sewage won't. It all runs downhill. And that's because the people up on top of the hill are going to keep going to the bathroom. Okay? And let me tell you this. They will go down to the bottom of the hill and fill up their pots and pans and go to the top of the hill and pour the water out of their pots and pans into their toilets because they didn't go out in their backyard and dig a privy so that they've got a place to dispose of their waste. And you people at the bottom of the hill, you won't be able to flush your toilets because all the water's coming down from the top of the hill and you need a shutoff valve in yours. All right, so I just thought I'd pass that on to you. It was one plumber to another. Your number one problem is a shutoff valve in your sewer. That's if you're living at the bottom of the hill. If you're up on top of the hill, you don't need a shutoff valve. But you ought to take a look at where you're living and make sure that you're not going to be flooded out by the sewage that's coming down the hill from the guys that are up on top. So I just thought I'd pass that one on to you. It was one plumber to another. Now, I gave you the bad news. The bad news is, Royal Bank of Scotland says that about 90 days from now, we can expect the implosion of the world stock markets. It's the last item to go. In the last Great Depression, it was the first item to go. It was the stock market bubble that popped, that triggered that Great Depression. In this case, we've got everything else triggering the Great Depression, the stock market's the last item to go, and it's the next one on the list. And that's the bad news. All right, boys and girls, let me give you a final reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.